Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the REN 2020 Annual Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must also advise you that this conference is being recorded today. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Ana Fernández. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to REN's Annual Results Conference Call on this sunny Friday here in Lisbon. As usual, we're joined by the executive team, the CEO, Rodrigo Costa, the COO, João Conceição, and the CFO, Gonçalo Soares. As usual, Rodrigo will start this call with his remarks, and then we'll pass on to Gonçalo for the presentation. Rodrigo, would you like to start?
Yes. Thank you, Ana. Good afternoon to all. The last 12 months were very different from anything we went through before. Being the COVID pandemic, the most dramatic event, we also have to have the fact that the energy transition phenomena was the dominant world trend. I think it affect all our activities last year. In spite of these challenges, we were able to deliver both operationally as well on the numbers front. Like millions of organizations, we introduced multiple organizational changes, reaching a point where we were only able to perform the critical tasks on site, with all other activities being managed remotely or suspended. As the slides will show you, we were able to perform well. We met all the service requirements, and from a project delivery perspective, we also recovered the majority of investment delays caused by the health crisis. We had a small decline in EBITDA and net profits, and at a large extent, consequence of the decrease of the main concessions and remuneration. CESE keeps being the negative delta that impact our ability to show our real value. This year, CESE went up since now includes Portgás. Without this tax, our payout ratio would be close to 80%, and the perception of the value we create would be even more positive. The energy transition remains the key trend and at the same time, the main opportunity. 2020 was a get-ready year. We were moving fast to a world more and more depending on electricity. Housing, industry, mobility, all the economy needs to change. We had a coal generation hard stop in Sines. We assist the launch of multiple public tenders for new renewable generation, and on this one, we have a major role supporting the energy agency and the government. We went through the planning process to adapt the grids to the upcoming generation transformation. We participated on the analysis of hydrogen as a complement or as an alternative to natural gas. The ongoing effort of the network digitalization to deal with the complexity of the new systems and the cybersecurity challenges was also a big part of what we did last year. Although it's hard to predict the impact we know the energy world will have, I think in 2020, we really start paving the way while dealing with the COVID and not losing track of our main mission. This is why we believe 2020 was hard, but a good year for us. Now we are going through the results and with Gonçalo, and after, we will participate on the presentation, and we'll be available to address all your questions. Gonçalo.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this call. If you want to move to slide number four and just repeating some of the key messages, what we saw this year were results coming in line or slightly above expectations, EBITDA reaching 470.2 million euros, a decrease of 3.3%. As you know, this is mainly due to, one, a lower RAB remuneration, a mix of lower rates, lower RAB, and the change in the gas regulatory framework. Secondly, there were also some cost pressure that I'll go through. Third, on the opposite side, there was a kind of one-off improvement in one of the expenses that also allowed allow to improve around 7 million at the end of the year our accounts. In terms of net profit, they ended up at 109.2 million euros, also with a positive contribution from financial results. The cost of debt has continued to go down from 2.1 to 1.8%. And we also have a slightly lower effective tax rate, which I will explain, but that is also coming from things that happened already in other quarters. In terms of funding, it's important to let you know that we have approved our green finance framework. We are now able to issue green bonds, and we will probably do so in the short term. Service quality has remained high, with very low interruption time and with a perfect availability rate at the gas business. Renewable sources reached a higher value versus last year, 59%. And to take you a little bit through some of the news in the sector and some of the indicators more from the operating side, I'll pass on to João Conceição, the COO, who will guide us through the next few slides. João?
Thanks, Gonçalo. Good afternoon to you all. Going into slide 5, we have a brief overview of the sector here in Portugal. The two most important plans that have been approved by the policymakers, the government and the regulator, were the National Energy and Climate Plan, which basically reinforced the bets of Portugal on developing renewable integration. We are setting a target to 2030 to have more than 80% of the electricity consumption in the country all generated from renewable sources. And at the same time, the government has also approved the national strategy for hydrogen, where it sets some targets, some mandatory targets, namely the incorporation of 10 to 15% of hydrogen into the natural gas network by 2030. As a response, we try to adjust our activity to this new reality of the energy transition. One important issue is that we are following all the EU funds opportunities, submitting our projects in order to get grants to develop those projects. One most important submission that we have done is regarding hydrogen, and in order to adjust and retrofit our natural gas infrastructure, the pipelines and the underground storage, to cope with this 10 to 15% target by 2030. On the electricity side, we support the launch of the second auction for new solar, which happened in August last year. We have been granted the authorization to develop additional CapEx projects on the network to create the necessary connection conditions for this capacity. And in addition to that, we continue developing the agreements with the solar promoters, following this new concept that the government has approved of bilateral agreements with these generators, making them responsible for paying all the necessary improvements on the grid, which of course are done by REN. In terms of the regulation perspective, as you know, 2020 was the first year of the new natural gas period with the adjustments of the parameters. Gonçalo will go into detail on those issues. Regarding electricity, we were supposed to be starting a new regulatory period last January, but due to this COVID impact, the regulator decided to postpone this new regulatory period, extending the existing one more year. So we will go into a new regulation by the end of 2021. On the following slide, we have a brief overview of the financial impacts of the COVID-19 in our business. Basically, we would highlight three different impacts. The first one was as a consequence of the lockdown we had last year, some two major projects, CapEx projects, need to be suspended during that period, and therefore we were not able to conclude them by the end of the year as we were forecasting for 2020. However, we are recovering all these delays, and by the end of 2021 we will have these two projects into operation. In terms of OPEX, we had some additional costs, some of them directly related to creating extra health and safety precautions for our people, as well as our suppliers, but also in some contributions for community efforts regarding the effort to fight against this COVID-19 pandemic. But not least, as a consequence of the decrease of the consumption, both in electricity and natural gas, there was a higher deviation than forecasted in the beginning, which in total, in net values, it made an increase of 33.5 million euros in terms of deviation versus the end of 2019. As following the rules of the regulatory rules, these deviations will be recovered in the next year. Going forward, and to slide 8, you have an overview of what happened in terms of operations and quality of service. In a nutshell, regarding consumption, as you know, there was a decrease in consumption on the electricity side, about 3%. In the natural gas, we had a decrease in consumption of 1.6, but here it's important to highlight that the large majority of this decrease in natural gas was due to the industrial consumption, as the consumption of gas for electricity generation in the CCGT's power plants actually increased despite all the pandemic constraints. In terms of quality of service, we keep improving the quality of service. In terms of electricity, we managed to decrease significantly the average interruption time, which was already a very good value, but we made it even better during 2020. On the natural gas side, in transmission, we managed to have almost 100% availability of our infrastructure, and on our distribution concession, Portgás, we managed to improve the response, emergency response, with less than 60 minutes. We managed to improve a little bit this indicator that the regulator uses to assess our quality of service. Last but not least, in terms of the overall consumption of electricity, due to the fact that 2020 was a little wetter than 2019, there was an increase in electricity generators from hydro plants, and these had a reflection on the overall renewables penetration, which got to the value of almost 59% of the only electricity consumed in Portugal last year coming from renewable sources. And with this, I give back to Gonçalo.
Thanks, João. So looking at slide number 9, it's just the main financial highlights with EBITDA coming down this 3.3%. Financial results also improved 11%. Net profit, because of all of these factors, came down 8%. But more than going through this slide, which is just the main highlights, let's move forward so I can give you some detail on how the company did last year. So looking at slide 10 and the consolidated view, what you see here is what we explained. So the major impact comes from RAB remuneration, which I'll go through. Then the second one is more OPEX contribution. This is a mix not only of increased costs, but also of decreased effective costs, because as you know, last year there was namely the revision of the costs for the gas in the gas framework. So that makes the acceptable costs come down also. On the positive side, we have a contribution which derives mainly from Transemel, as it was not last year integrated the full year, only 3 months. And then you have other revenues, smaller things, but also, and the main impact is that IRAI incentives, that RAI incentives that I'll guide you through in a little bit more detail in the next slide. So what you can see is that in kind of weight, you see gas coming down a little bit in weight, electricity going up, and international also going up a little bit. So if you go to slide 11, what you see here on the graph is basically the trend that you've seen in past. You see that due to the COVID crisis, that there was this kind of bump in the first half of last year that allowed us to have a slightly higher than anticipated ROAR, but the average yield, you can see, came down quite significantly. So that's reflected in electricity, but in gas, it also reflected not only because of that trend, but also because of the revision of the framework, as we explained before. And so we are all almost at the floor in every single one of these rates. It's also interesting to see that in the electricity one, and if you do the blending, which is how you should look at this, and so if you put the incentives in there, the story is a little bit different. You see a rate which is actually slightly above 6%, and because of this, namely this incentive of RAE, that increased. Let me spend a minute just going over this, because since it represents an increase of 7 million, for you to understand. So this is something that relates to the fully depreciated assets. So it's something that is a function of the net asset and gross asset ratio, but then is defined also based on what kind of quality, if you want, we have on the network. And that derives, and that then makes it a function of three different curves that you can attain, given what level, at which level you are. And it depends on three main function, which is one is the availability rate, how much the network is available or not. Secondly, how much time it is interrupted, so the quality of service that operations have. And thirdly, the capacity of interconnection of the network. So typically, if you fail two of these, you get zero. If you get the two first ones, which is the availability and the time interruption, which is basically the quality, you are on the middle curve, which is the 25 million, which we usually have. If you achieve all three and exceed the capacity of interconnection above a certain value, which is 27%, you can go to the left curve. This year in concrete, and that was not the case in the past years, but this year in reality that happened, so we attained the interconnection number came to 27.8, so we were able to go to the next level of the curve. Also to manage a little bit expectations. This is not something that you should expect to be repeated last year. Our, I'd say, normal expectation is that we would be around this 25 million, but so this was, I'd say, an exceptional and a one-off kind of a number in terms of this incentive. Okay, so moving to slide number 12, you have the dynamic in terms of CAPEX and transfers to RAB. So I think that our investment areas did an amazing job being able to recuperate almost all of the delay that they had due to those stoppages in the pandemic. Bear in mind that at the end of the year, although we did not stop to work, there were still already other constraints present to the team, and we were able to recuperate and have a CAPEX which is below last year, but almost in line with last year. Nevertheless, in terms of transfers to RAB, that was not possible, because there's basically two main projects, one which is the Castelo Branco Fundão. In there's the line and the substation, and it represents more than 40 million euros. The other one is the Fernão Ferro Trafaria, which also represents around 30 million euros, and only those two projects were 70 million. As you can see, if you're on top of the 80 million, you have those 70 million, it would be a completely different picture in terms of RAB, but that was not possible to completely compress the delay at the end of the year of those 2 months that we had to stop. Okay, you see that impact on slide 13, so that's why you see all of these drops in terms of all of the components of the asset. Normally you have electricity with premium going up in last year, that was not the case because of this. Okay, so this was clearly an impact of those delays. It is also interesting to see that in electricity with premium and without premium, the decrease is around 61 million, And if we only look at those 71 million of those two projects that could have been concluded if we did not have this, I think we could be looking at a completely different picture for electricity, which, as been what we've been saying, is happening due to this decarbonization process ongoing in Portugal, which is driving CapEx, namely in electricity. Going to slide number 14. So this is looking at the return on RAB. So all of them is basically the tendency is negative impact in the rate of return due to lower rates, namely in gas, because of the revision of the framework, and also negative impact in terms of asset base, namely in electricity, because of those delays that I spoke to you about. Okay. Overall, in terms of how they contribute to EBITDA, what you see is a slight increase of electricity from 63% to 64%, a slight decrease of gas from 34% to 32%. Slide number 15, and looking at our cost. So here you can see that the cost went up by 3.7 million euros. Most of that increase in core costs comes from core external costs, and almost all of them come from the issue relating to furnace cleaning. This is something that we not only reinforced, but we anticipated this year. So, and it is both a mix of volume and of price, because there were changes in legislation, and not only did everybody in Portugal and REN also had to increase the volume, but all of the companies that are within this space did not multiply, and so the price for these services went up quite a bit, and that's why the growth relative to 18 is so large. We should, and just to give an idea, we should not expect this value to remain. We should expect that in 21 this should come down a little bit. Then you had some COVID-related costs that impact negatively around 1 million, and you have positive impact from electricity costs in the terminal. This is not due to lower activity. For instance, the number of ships were 62 versus 64, so the activity is basically the same, the quantity is the same. It's basically because at the terminal, the price of electricity is driven by the wholesale price of electricity that on average last year was 39% lower than in 2019. Okay. In terms of personnel, nothing unusual, very stable costs. We increased 9 people last year here in Portugal, 4 people in Chile, but personnel costs were pretty stable along the way. So I would say that is the major explanation. If you look at non-core, and just to give you also a brief comment, these increases come basically from this interconnection or cross-border costs. It relates to both import and export activity that you have. And that explains most of it, but it also comes from, for instance, the cost of earth increased around 4%, which represents 400,000 euros, and there's other costs relating to other pan-European projects where we are, where you have to participate by legal obligation, like Correios or Terradas, that also contribute here, but these are completely passed through, and most of them legal obligations that we have. Slide 16, just looking at the international business, what you can see is that it now accounts for around 3% of our EBITDA. It was 2% previously, so it grew a little bit. Electrogas, on the bottom, the gas business, very, very stable. So the dynamic with imports from Argentina stabilized. We were able to increase a little bit the take-or-pay revenue. Actually, the gas outlook in Chile is not in the next year so bad, so I'd say that stability for Electrogas is the name of the game. In terms of TransML, there was, I'd say versus 19 already, we knew that there would be a negative impact, but because it had around 3 million euros that were non-recurrent in the 2019 account. was an indemnity and some accounts that we had to regularize with CGE, with the seller. But at the same time, we were going to be compensated by new projects. But the reality is that there in Chile, we also had the impact of the COVID crisis, and that also had an impact of around 2.53 million of revenue relating to that. Here we have this compensation that then came from higher rate of return in Chile that does not happen. Also, to give you a feeling that there in that area, although this was delayed, we are recuperating this year. As in Portugal, we are recuperating this delay. And in Chile, there is a little bit of CapEx upside, as there are also other organic projects that will come online along the way and that were not fully captured in our expectations. Moving to slide 17, in depreciation, no major comments, apart the fact that there is an increase relating to the inclusion of TransML. In terms of financial or results, this improvement was due to our permanent refinancing, and so that allowed us to decrease 27 basis points the average cost of funding to 1.8%. We also had slightly higher dividends, but it was mostly driven by funding. I will come back to the funding part in a minute. Looking at taxes, what you can see is the dynamic that we said before. So on one side, we are paying a higher levy because of this inclusion of Portgas. It accounts for plus 4 million euros, 4.1 million euros. On the other side, we had some issues that we were dealing with the tax authorities in court that we won and provided us with 5.6 million euros of one-off profit that made the effective tax rates come down to 24.6% versus 27.7% if we exclude the special levy from the equation. So in slide 19, everything is kind of in one picture. You have this negative impact of EBITDA, the financial results improve a little bit, depreciation comes back. It's always the mirror of what happens in EBITDA. Says the special levy also had a negative impact, and the income tax, although a one-off, on one side, and because you had lower results, is a positive impact in terms of how you look at that income, and so we come to this 109.2 million euro figure. Slide 19, and talking a little bit about funding. What you saw was this decrease in net debt, so it decreased 3%, 84 million euros. This, despite the fact that, as João already explained, we have a small increase in the tariff deviations, mostly due to that issue around electricity consumption and other issues, but mostly around that. You can also see that there is a positive impact at the end of around 30 million. It's mostly related to subsidies. Most of it is related to the fact that, if you remember, we have a major project which was wind float done in 19, and part of it is subsidized, and we received a 26 million euro amount that is reflected here in our cash flow and affects this positively. So in terms of the debt maturity, you see that there is an amount that we have to refinance this year. Okay, and this is why we are going to make a bond issuance in the short term. We have the green finance framework approved. We did a roadshow that went very well, a non-deal roadshow some time ago. So as you know, I cannot give you specifics in terms of amount or exact date, but it should be in the short term. We normally always issue between 7 and 10 years, so there should be no surprises around that, okay? So this is basically to refinance a bond that matures in 2023. Because of liquidity reasons, we have to have those more than 2 years in advance refinancing, so we are doing that refinancing this year. but do not expect any major impact in cost that comes from that refinancing, as we are only going to repay that 1.75 coupon of that bond that we issued in 2016. We only pay it in 2023. So that's when you'll see the major impact come from the refinancing of this bond. But it will have an impact in maturity that will probably come back closer to the 4 million that we normally have. Slide 20 just gives you an idea of how the stock evolved. So although we continue to give out a good dividend yield and a good TSR both last year and historically, it was a year that was slightly tougher also because of COVID, but slightly tougher namely at the end of the year. But now we have, I'd say, mostly buy recommendation, and we will see how this evolves in the coming time. Just moving to part number three, which and since we are now finalizing the 3 years of the strategic plan, just to give you some ideas of how we did. And so we have three main major, axes of strategy. One was operational excellence and core business consolidation. I think we fulfilled that, very high service quality level. We executed on energy transition, and you saw the CapEx domestically grow. In terms of discipline growth, we also delivered. So we were careful, but we did the Transamel acquisition, and we are now integrating it with very carefully. And in solid financials, we've kept these investment grade credit metrics, and we try to maintain always a robust financial structure. In slide 23, looking at each of the public numbers that we had put out, we were able to deliver on all of them. EBITDA, we delivered on average, not on every year, but on average, we delivered with our interval. Same thing for net profits, we delivered on average with this indicator. We only failed less this year, but it's almost at the level, and on average we clearly were able to achieve. Net debt, we delivered every single year, and we delivered on average. Also in domestic capex, we were much above what we had anticipated at the business plan execution. So slide 24, and just to give you a few of 2021. So I say that we are in domestically recuperating these delays that we said, that we were going to recuperate at the beginning of the year. Those small deviations that we referred to last year should be recuperated in 2022. Also, as you know, this is a year of regulatory review for electricity. João and his team have not started yet discussions with the regulator, but this is going to follow the normal kind of timings, and we'll only have news for you after the summer. The national footprint will be focusing on integrating Transamel, which should be done in the next few months. That's our focus. In terms of interest, so we will continue to maintain being committed to very strong investment grade credit metrics. As you know, we don't have a specific debt target. We are very strongly committed to have these credit metrics. We just concluded that framework for green bond, and we will be issuing that going to be our focus. Just to give you one thing and one update, so we are going to update the strategy plan this year, and we will announce that on the second quarter, and Rodrigo at the end will give you the exact date that will do so. Okay, so with this and going to sustainability, I'll pass it to Rodrigo.
Okay, just a quick comment on a topic that it's now in the agenda of basically every organization, you know, which is ESG. We have been working in a lot of different activities since a few years. Now we will become more and more visible in terms of what we have been doing and what we want to do. I think, you know, we already cover some of the things that are important that we are doing, including the green bond issuing. And basically, you know, you have here some of the marks we already got. You know, I think we are making a lot of progress in terms of gender equality. You know, REN is perceived as a same opportunity company in terms of gender. You know, we keep investing a lot in the training of our people. Of course, this year was especially challenging in terms of keeping up with all the work we were doing before, but I think we managed to deliver very well. We are doing a very, very big effort in terms of, you know, let's say forest preservation, because not only because of the huge fires we had in the past years, we increased our activity, but it's something we know how to do it, and we have very ambitious goals, all aligned with the United Nations development goals, sustainable development goals. And then we have a series of programs that we've been developing in Portugal since many years. Our REN Award, it's a scientific award that is the oldest scientific award in Portugal and probably the largest. We have a few others also that are directed to reward community initiatives, which we really enjoy doing. We have several programs where we have our own employees helping the communities where we are integrated. And in terms of governance and ethics, we keep, you know, we keep doing a big effort in terms of, you know, not just the transparency of the operation of our board, but a little bit about everything we do end to end. And again, this is something now, you know, every company is becoming more visible with the initiatives on ESG, and we will not be an exception. And when we present the next period initiatives, I think we will share a little bit more about what we are planning to do in the next few years. And now we move just a quick note on the hydrogen. And hey, João.
Thanks, Rodrigo. Just to brief you on the hydrogen side, additional information what we presented so far. So as you know, there is this IPCE call of interest launched by the Portuguese government. This covers the whole value chain for hydrogen, from renewables, generation of electricity, hydrogen production, transport of hydrogen, storage, supply, etc. We, due to our focus in our activities, we are looking all the activities related to our core business and to our duties of transmission and distribution operator. And we will focus on those in what concerns to hydrogen as well. We are also participating. In fact, we were founding member of a new collaborative lab that is focused on all the issues related to hydrogen. It's called the iLab, and we are participating on this lab with 20 other companies. And as I mentioned in the beginning, we launched our application for the EU Innovation Fund in order to have grants for the retrofitting of our infrastructure in terms of transmission and storage in the natural gas system. We are actually now assessing in terms of prospects for the new future, and in the strategy day, we are planning to present you a more detailed view on this hydrogen issue.
Just to finish, I'm sure you are well aware. You know, some of you already wrote about the announcements we did yesterday. We are going to propose to the general shareholder meeting a dividend of 17.1, exactly the same as the past few years, in line with what was the expectations we basically had given to the market. And as Gonçalo said in the beginning, we are going to announce our new strategy on May 14th. We are planning to host. It is going to be, of course, a virtual event. We will we'll probably, you know, do it from here. And we look forward now to your questions. We will be all available to address them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A queue. This will only take a few moments. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, please press star one if you'd like to ask a question. Thank you. And your first question comes from the line of Ignacio Dominguez calling from JB Capital. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three, actually. So my first question is related to the international business in Chile, mainly Transemel and Electrogas. I was wondering if you could provide a rough figure for the expected EBITDA contribution in 2021 and 2022. Any contribution to CAPEX would be really helpful too. Then my second question is related to the delays arising from COVID-19 on the impact in the investment execution in 2020. Should we expect a full recovery in 2021 or could we achieve towards 2022? And lastly, I was wondering if you could provide an update on the expected evolution of the special energy tax in Portugal. Thank you.
Ignacio, relative to your first question, I mean, we don't give out specific numbers in terms of outlook. So I gave you an outlook. We don't expect any surprise. There are, what you should see is that the Transemel EBITDA should go up, given that we are concluding CAPEX. So as they come online, it will increase the revenues of Transemel in 2021, and in Electrogas you should see much stability. So, but that gives you kind of a little bit of a flavor, but I cannot give you very specific numbers. Okay.
On the other two questions, the, you know, COVID-19 impact. As Gonçalo said in the beginning, you know, we had the impact we mentioned, and we expect the full recovery will happen during this year. You know, we are not anticipating any issue, you know, and we believe that the worst situation is behind us, and you know, the country is now in getting into much better shape, and we just need to make sure that we don't go back to where we were a couple of months ago. In terms of the test process, you know, we are still with the process. We are not seeing any major change for the time being. You know, since you know the first day we spoke about CES, we knew it was going to be slow. The court case, it is slow, and the only thing that by now we would expect that CES would start to go away. It should have started to go away. We'll remain hopeful that that will happen, but we know how the, you know, the system operates. It takes time, and it's something that really affects our accounts, and we keep the pressure. We are committed to the case, and you know, we have to be patient because we are not, you know, on the driving seat in this topic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Antonio Salados, who is a private investor. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. One question for me relates with the dividend policy. So your dividend is... your payout ratio before the tax is below 100%, and after the tax, the extraordinary tax is above 100%. So my question is, how sustainable the current situation is? How comfortable do you feel about keep paying this dividend, even that is, it will be above the net income, assuming that the extraordinary tax will be here for the coming years. So I don't know if you can share with us your thoughts about it.
To your very last comment, we cannot share. We have been always extremely, you know, careful in the way we disclose information. You know, we will have a Capital Markets Day coming in May, and any news we will share, it will happen on that precise date. Concerning what we have been doing, what we decided to propose this year, we believe what we are proposing is absolutely in line with what the company can afford to do it, and we feel comfortable. And if we would think otherwise, we would not be proposing this number. It's above the payout ratio, of course it is, a little bit, not too much, you know, and it is, and we are dealing with this super high tax system. And we have been commenting, we have a very strong free cash flow. You know, we have the necessary reserves, and I think it's just fine to do it.
Okay, thank you very much. Fair enough.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Fernando Marzilia, calling from RBC. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, actually, Fernando Garcia. So coming back to the extraordinary tax, no? So I think that here the let's say more recent scenario is probably looking to a gradual reduction of the extraordinary tax in line with the evolution of the tariff deficit. So I wanted to know how is this process going in the negotiations with the government. If we have to wait until to see what is the evolution of the tariff deficit or in the electricity sector in the at the end of 2021 to know what is happening, and together with the negotiation of the 22 budget to know what could be the evolution of that. So that is my first question, and then the second question is on hydrogen. Hydrogen at the moment implies a higher cost. I wanted to know how are the negotiations in Portugal, who is going to be paying this over cost, if it's going to be through European funds or Portuguese consumers has to pay a part. So if you want, you can tell me how is the process regarding this over cost payment. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the question, Fernando. Well, in fact, you know, in both questions, you mentioned the word negotiations with government. You know, when we deal with government, we don't disclose what we talk. You know, and to be honest, neither we have negotiations going on with on the tax front, neither on the hydrogen. You know, we basically are a taker. And on the extraordinary tax, you know, we know the public information. We know what it is in the budget for this year, and they didn't remove the tax or they introduced any decline yet. We are, as I said before today, we are hopeful that they will do something. But we were also hopeful 6 years ago, and it didn't happen until now. We believe that the government is going to deliver on their commitment, and as you said, the commitment of decreasing the tax in function also of the decrease of the tariff deficit. And if you ask me if they are going to deliver on that, that's my assumption. And the more time goes by, the more conviction I have that they have to do something, you know. It's kind of the frustration is higher, for sure, but at the same time, the hopes that we are reaching a point where things will change, you know, it's also coming to that point. On H2, as I said, you know, the hydrogen discussion is at different stages depending on the country you do the analysis, you know. To look to Spain, to Portugal, to Italy, to France, to Germany, to UK, to Australia, you have very, very different approaches. you know, some governments are more enthusiastic, some are less enthusiastic. You know, we have a problem to solve. You know, the energy transition, as I mentioned in the beginning, it's a big challenge for all of us. And now I think, you know, we are trying, all the industry is trying to see if hydrogen can be, you know, a key solution, you know, a partial solution. You know, for sure it's going to be there. For sure it's going to help on the energy transition. Now the question is, you know, how? You touch a point that is very critical on this equation, which is the, you know, the price. The price of hydrogen will be a consequence of the price of electricity supplied to produce hydrogen. And I think we have a few questions. You know, the governments are working hard on trying to figure out how much they are going to invest, how they will be financing these efforts. But we are at the moment where we do not have too many answers. We are involved in the discussions. It's not really negotiations. At this point, I would call them really studies. And we are very committed to these studies. We know, as João Conceição mentioned, we know what kind of role we can play on the long term and on the short term. We know that to incorporate 5-10% in the investments will be minor. But if we start talking about 2025, they will get bigger and bigger. And, you know, and we will need storage. And we will need, we need to make sure that we can do the transportation of the high-pressure hydrogen. And one thing we know, our role will be the role that is designed in our concessions today. Our concessions will allow us to take a big part on the projects. The question is now to understand how big the projects will be. And nobody has the answer yet. And I think this is something that, again, the government will have to play a major role, and also the European Commission.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Your next question comes from the line of Sara Piccinini calling from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question, and I apologize if you have answered already to some, because I had some connection problems. Sorry. So the first question is, I see in your presentation in page 5, you are talking about negotiation stage of bilateral agreement for grid connections with PV producers. Can you explain what this is related to, and if there is any eventual upside for REN coming from these negotiations? The second question is on the level of OPEX that we have seen for this year. Obviously, some of them are related to CAPEX, but are there also any underlying costs that are higher and that we should see also for the next years? And finally, on 2021, if you can give us the expectation regarding the corporate tax rate and the financial costs that you see, even assuming that you will issue the new green bond, and also a level of investments that you expect just for 2021. I know that you will provide more details at the business plan, but for 2021 would be helpful. Many thanks.
Thanks, Sara, for your question. I will try to answer the first one, and I will pass to Gonçalo for the other two. These are a new thing. These bilateral agreements is a new thing that the government foreseen regarding the solar development. And basically, what it tries to cope is to put on the generators the responsibility of paying the development of the grid instead of making the consumers do that payment. So when we are doing these connections, we are basically developing new elements on the grid, and the only difference is that instead of being paid by the consumers, so being transferred to RAB at the value of the investment, We will be paid directly by the generators, and we will replicate with the generators exactly the same conditions that we have on the regulatory framework. And in terms of regulatory treatment, this is considered to be an investment that is fully subsidized. So it will be transferred to our asset base at value zero.
Okay, so on the other two questions that you have. So on costs, although there is not a specific trend, you should not expect to see costs come down. You have, as I said, this year, a few costs that were abnormally high, the forest cleaning, but there are other costs, for instance, relating to insurance costs are rising a little bit. It's not only us, but other companies. So that's going to compensate that. There's a few other costs that may go up, but for instance, if you issue a bond, that's going to be a cost that you didn't have last year. You are doing a business plan exercise, that's going to be a cost that you didn't have last year. So you'll probably see costs go up a little bit. Relative to other issues in 2021 that you wanted to talk about, so tax rate, I'd say, is the normal tax rate. We always have kind of a normal tax rate that we anticipate, okay, in terms of effective tax rate. And that should not change versus what is the normal. I could not anticipate if we have abnormal recuperations of some sort. Typically, that effective tax rate is around 28.5%. Okay. The financial costs, as I told you, do not expect any major impact from the bond issuance. As I said, the bond issuance is going to be to refinance the bond that actually will only pay out in a couple of years. So the immediate substitution of funding from that funding, from that bond, is not going to be a much higher cost than it is now. So what I would say you can expect is the same slightly lower average cost of debt, but we do not anticipate such a decrease as we did last year because of this. I would anticipate, and it's very clear. You can go to our bonds and the schedule, some are in 23, 24, 25, and those are the years where exactly you will see the impact in terms of funding costs. In terms of investment, so we are, as I said, recuperating things from the past. We are seeing that there is many projects that in electricity are coming from the decarbonization push. So I would much anticipate that we'll have a little bit higher capex than we have this year. So I cannot give you a number, but that's our anticipation, and we will have much higher transfers to RAB than we had this year. So we are going to recuperate not only the ones last year, but we are going to generate new transfers to RAB this year. So we will probably be capex level above what we had in 19, but not materially above that, okay, a little bit above. Okay, thank you.
Many thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions, so I'll hand the call back over to the speakers.
Well, I think we reached the end of the presentation. As we explained, we are quite happy with the results. I think, you know, especially if we take in consideration all the challenges we had and how the world is moving, I think we deliver, and we look forward to keep contact with you. You know, I'm sure Anna will give you the final words, making herself available to help in any way we can. But, on my side is João and Gonçalo. We look forward to see you, even if it is virtually, in our Capital Market Day in a few weeks.
Yeah, Rodrigo, thank you for your words. That's right. I'm available. If you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great Friday.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.